to Guerrilla Radio, recorded January 14th, 2026. Well, the secret's out. The Western world, led by America and its colorful leader, has slipped into tyranny. But, and it's a huge but, Donald Trump can't take all the credit. Authoritarian crackdowns have been cracking in myriad places and ways for a long time. One of the methods of shutting up critics in the European Union, for example, is sanctioning, as with that favored economic instrument orchestrated in hundreds of variations to punish Putin's Russia. EU sanctions now target not just Russian oligarchs, but European citizens, with the temerity to criticize Brussels' pathological foreign policy, among other things. And what this portends the continent today, a famous long-dead Veronese gentleman explains, is no sudden mean of death, though ne'er so mean, but banished. Diana Johnstone is an American journalist and author who's lived and worked in Paris for decades. She, too, has in that time served as press secretary to the Green Group in the European Parliament, an experience recounted in her latest book, Circle of Darkness, Memoirs of a World Watcher. Johnstone's other book titles include Fool's Crusade, Yugoslavia, NATO, and Western Delusions, and From Mad to Madness, Inside Pentagon Nuclear War Planning, co-written with her father, Paul H. Johnstone. Her many essays on global affairs can also be found at consortiumnews.com. Now, Diana has taken up the cudgel in defense of author and frequent foreign policy media interview subject, the former Swiss military colonel and intelligence officer, Jacques Beau. Diana Johnstone in the first half. And for his part, Donald Trump's wars rage at home, abroad, and everywhere in between, including a battle for global trade routes using the last sure thing America thinks it has, naval power. Whether Caribbean cigarette boats or internationally flagged supertankers, none are safe when the emperor's boom lowers. John Helmer's a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and served as advisor to governments at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Sovcom Plot, How Pirates Tried to Capture the Treasure of the Russian Seas and Were Caught Out, and his latest The Skripal in Prison sequel, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison Which Fooled the World. John Helmer and World War C Rising in the second half. But first, Diana Johnstone on Jacques Beau, alive but not well and living in Brussels. Welcome back to the show, Diana.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, you know that. Now, Diana, beyond my brief introduction, who is Jacques Beau?
Jacques Beau is a retired Swiss military intelligence officer specializing in analyzing military situations and also in peace negotiations. And he has simply, after his retirement, he has continued his activities of analysis. When he was active, he worked for the Swiss military, for the United Nations, and for NATO. So he's never had any relationship other than to observe it to the Russian or other side of things.
Yeah, he doesn't. His resume doesn't sound like he's any kind of radical or anything like that. I'm familiar with him from his appearances online on various of the blogger shows that you can see on YouTube and in other places as well. I've been quite surprised because he's been very critical of the Ukraine war, of the not only the European role in it, but just the war in itself, the origins of it, and its continuance especially.
Yes, well, I think this case of Jacques Beau is extremely important because it touches on a number of very critical issues. It's not just a personal matter. It touches censorship, human rights, the rule of law to start with, but that's not all.
What's happened to him now? I guess we should say for people who don't realize, I mean, not only that maybe don't know Jacques Beau, but just what happened now? He, as I said, he's been outspoken about the Ukraine war, and now the European Union Commission has come down on him.
It's the foreign policy branch of the European Commission, headed by Kaja Kallas, who is sort of a joke as the foreign policy spokesperson for the European Union, since she has demonstrated her ignorance on a number of occasions. But she signs this order, which was accepted by the foreign ministers of the European Union. And it is the sort of sanction that is usually applied to members of a country that they consider adversarial. And this time it is applied to a Swiss citizen. Of course, Switzerland is not a member of the European Union, but it's surrounded by European Union member states. So much so that the sanctions on Jack Bow, particularly personally, terrible. He happens to live in Brussels. And the sanctions are incredibly harsh on him personally. One of them is that he cannot travel through or over EU territory, meaning that he cannot return to his native Switzerland or even fly there because he would be flying over EU territory. This is incredible, but it's true. Also, his bank accounts have been frozen, so he has no access to his own money. He cannot receive, it is illegal for him to receive help from anybody else. If certain people weren't helping him, perhaps illegally, illegally, he would starve to death. It's absolutely unbelievable what they're doing to this man who is, I think, 70 years old or something like that, and who has never done anything that even approaches violating any law anywhere.
Well, and we should say that Jacques Bow isn't the only person suffering these sanctions. There's at least, that I've seen, 59 Europeans, individuals, under the sanctions from the European Union Commission.
Bow has never defended Russian positions, but he's accused of doing so. The others have. I know Xavier Moreau defends Russian positions quite honestly and sincerely, I believe. You can believe in those things. But Bow has very carefully used only Western sources in his analysis and has struggled always to remain neutral on these things, simply analyzing what is untrue propaganda and so on and so on. And he is being accused of essentially being a Russian mouthpiece, which is a total slander. He's accused of conspiracy theories. That's an accusation that they just throw at anybody. He's not guilty of any conspiracy theories, and if he were, that would be an opinion after all. I mean, if what is a conspiracy theory? That's something that is not very well defined. But in any case, these accusations against him are completely invented, and that is significant in itself, because unlike the other people, it's significant that that these charges are totally false, because it means that by sanctioning Jack Bow, they can sanction anybody. And that's the point. If you sanction, you could sanction absolutely anybody, because he hasn't even said some of the things that they say he's said. So it's meant, obviously, to intimidate everybody. And, of course, the more difficulties had, the more intimidating it is, because who wants to be in that situation?
Well, and the difference between sanctions and charges, when you say he's been accused, from what I've seen of him talking about this issue, it doesn't seem like there is any charges, formal charges. There's no court date and no avenue for defense.
No, none, absolutely none. This is a purely administrative decision taken by the European Union, which, according to treaties, this is the catch, that according to the treaties, EU law takes precedence over the member states' law. So all of the member states' law of human rights, freedom of expression, are superseded by a decision made by an administrative body with no procedures. He didn't know this was coming. There was no hearing. There was no investigation, nothing. They simply threw this thing on him. And there is no, and since it was not a legal situation, decision, it was not a legal decision that went through courts, there is no legal appeal. There is no way to appeal it to courts because it's extra legal. This is incredible. So they have invented a way to sanction people which simply annuls all of the human rights that everybody is supposed to have.
And beyond this as well, I mean, when you say that, well, he's accused, it's slander to say that he is a Russian mouthpiece, for example, a charge we hear on this side of the Atlantic often enough in the press. But even if that were the case, I mean, so does, are there no, as you mentioned, the vaunted Western liberal democracy's values, even if he were speaking for the Russians, or at least echoing opinions that coincided with theirs, so what? I mean, these are his opinions. Are people in Europe now no longer allowed an opinion that is contrary to policies of the European Union Commission?
You can't say that they're not allowed it, but if they have such opinion, they might be sanctioned.
You're allowed to say it, but you might go to jail for it.
Well, not to jail, but just be stuck without any money, any means to keep alive. He can't pay his bills. He can't pay his rent. You realize that? I mean, that's not a small matter. In this society, if you can't get at your bank accounts, your credit cards are no good, you have no means of support. You have no means of livelihood.
Well, and does that extend to that if I'm the grocer and Jacques Beau, you know, sneaks into my grocery shop and he's got some money that's been in his mattress and I sell him food, is something going to happen to me? Will I be charged?
I don't think they go that far. But it's really far enough as it has gone, because how does he get the money to start with? That's where the catch comes, not at the grocers.
This is an endorsement of putting money in your mattress and not putting it in the bank, and certainly not getting involved with this whole move for a digital currency.
Absolutely.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Diana Johnstone. Diana is an American journalist and author. She's lived and worked in Paris for decades. Her latest book is Circle of Darkness, Memoirs of a World Watcher. It in part recounts her experiences working within the European Parliament, specifically in the Green Group. Diana, we see here too that this... what's going on with Jacques Beau isn't the only problem people are having.
But I want to come back to that because I haven't got to the real point. Jacques Beau. No, I mean, the case of Jacques Beau is not only a human rights freedom of speech issue, which in fact, by which the EU is denying all these rights, but it is also a very serious international issue because Jacques Beau was specializing in studying situations to understand both sides, because understanding both sides is the beginning of negotiations or solving problems. And what this does is it criminalizes understanding the other side, simply understanding, not agreeing with it, but understanding it is being banned. And that means no negotiations, no diplomacy, and no peace. In other words, this is a sort of declaration of intellectual war in the fact that it is not allowed to understand the Russian point of view, because if you're going to negotiate something, you need to understand both sides, the Ukrainian side, everything. This is particularly significant in the fact that he is Swiss, because Switzerland has traditionally been a neutral country which could intervene, could mediate between other countries, between hostile countries. It was never gotten into the modern wars. And Beau is a Swiss, and as a Swiss, he was rather specialized in this sort of neutrality thing of being able to mediate. And the Swiss government has taken 26 days simply to make a rather mild protest to the EU. He is not even being supported forcefully by his own Swiss government. And he was interviewed several times by Pascal Lottaz, who is Swiss but lives in Asia. And Lottaz, the other day, YouTube took down Lottaz's site for having interviewed him. They put it back later, apparently because of a lot of protests, perhaps from that excellent commentator.
Jeffrey Sachs.
That's it. But the point is that this measure is really a way of saying any mediation, any effort to find understanding with the other side is banned. And what that really means is that the European Union is counting on, is planning for, going to full-out war with Russia. That's what it means. It's not just a personal human rights issue. It's a very serious international issue because it means war. If you can't talk to other people, if you can't understand, if you can't try to understand people, you're going to be at war forever.
Well, yes, and given Russia's history, or Europe's history, and I noticed that that Switzerland also voted, was it last year or the year before, to end its traditional neutrality, which was a shocker to me. But without having these mediating entities in place, people that can get through, I mean, perhaps it's Russia today, but it might be inter-European wars tomorrow. And if they have this attitude that peace is off the table, and even anyone that broaches peace talks can be criminalized or even assassinated, as we've seen in other cases in the Middle East, where peace envoys have been targeted, that's our fate then, is forever war until only the victor stands.
That's the way it looks. That's why I consider this extremely serious, both as a personal issue, a legal issue, because I think that this extra legal, having extra legal decisions of this type amounts to denying legality. If you can just go all over on top of the law, around the law, then the law doesn't really exist anymore as an obligation.
Well, speaking of prominent people standing up, I saw an interview with MEP Michael von der Schulenburg with Glenn Deason just the other day, and he was talking about the Jacques Beau case as well. He is attempting to rally members of the European Parliament together to fight against this measure. So far, he's a bit of a voice in the wilderness within that body, but he describes the European Parliament as riven with fear and paranoia, everybody keeping their heads below the parapets for fear of von der Leyen and Kaya Kallas.
I don't know about that. I was there a long time. I wouldn't put it so much fear. I think that the members of the European Parliament have been usually kicked upstairs by their native party. They have no significant real powers. I mean, they comment on things and so on. And every Thursday, they can make resolutions, pass resolutions. And their favorite thing is to pass resolutions defending the human rights in South Sudan, or I don't know, every place is very far away and about which they know nothing. And they are always making moral judgments about everybody. But when it comes to somebody in Europe, silence. Not interested. Never heard of it.
when you describe the European Parliament in those terms, as it stands now, as for the members, that seems then disproportionate that the leadership of that body is essentially claiming to speak for all of Europe. And there's fractures within the European Union now because of that. Viktor Orban notably came out and again with the as the Ukrainian conflict being the center, he says that, well, his country will not abide by the EU strictures that they devote a certain amount of money to defense and into donating money to Ukraine, because it would impoverish his country and ruin his social programs and everything else. Are there other countries that are ready to break from the European Union over the Ukraine issue and others?
They're not really ready to break. The trouble is, the other dissident country member state is Slovakia. But Slovakia is even less influential than Hungary, which is not very influential. The EU is run basically by Germans with some input from the French, less and less, I must say, although Macron is trying to get influence, but the German influence is pretty overwhelming, especially with Ursula von der Leyen. And of course, Kaja Kallas from Estonia is simply a puppet of the Germans. It's basically Europe, the German Europe that Hitler wanted. There it is. The trouble is that in France, for instance, when people don't like the laws that are being passed or not being passed or whatever is being done, and they complain they don't like Macron, and indeed they don't, as if he were responsible. And they fail to point out that these measures that are being forced on them are coming from Brussels. They're coming from the European Union. All of the economic policies that the French don't like originate with the European Union. And it's too easy to just blame Macron, who's terrible. I don't defend him. But the fact is that he is simply a loyal servant of Europe.
Diana, we're fast running out of time. But before we go, we've talked in the past about Marie Le Pen. I see that her appeal is now just begun in the French courts. Do you want to recap a little bit for our listeners that didn't catch our other interviews? What happened to Le Pen, who she is, what happened to her, and what her position is right now with this court? And we're only a couple minutes away.
I'll be short about this, because I've talked about it before. I consider that the charges against her were, if not totally trumped up, hugely exaggerated. They were not the result of an examination of how things work in the parliament. They focused on her, the German head of the parliament. They focused on her because they don't like her and got her in all this trouble. And so she is appealing a movement that made her ineligible to run for office. And that's very serious, because she's the leading presidential candidate. Today, the prosecution endorsed her position, and it looks like she's going to get off.
And before we go, now, you sent me a note before going on the air saying, oh, incidentally, because you are American, but you're also a native of St. Paul, Minnesota. We're seeing up in Canada and everywhere in the world, I expect, what's going on in the United States. And it seems centered right now, at least, on Minnesota. What are your comments about what the Trump government is doing, and especially as it's affecting your compatriots in Minnesota?
Well, I want to say, to start with, that I blame the left for this mess in the sense that for years and years they have refused to discuss the problem of regulating immigration, and the Biden administration and so on have been lax about the problem of immigration, because immigration is something to be not banned, but regulated anywhere. And that has been, and the backlash from that is this Trump campaign, which has gone completely overboard in the opposite direction. If they wanted to increase the number of illegal immigrants that are arrested and deported. Why don't they concentrate on the red states where the population would support these measures? Now, that's an interesting question, because I think there are some states where the majority of the population would support that. Instead, they are sending these masked, heavily armed, brutal ICE agents into precisely the places where the population is likely not to want them. And what they've done by this violence is that for the people, I'm sure, in Minnesota, the issue is no longer immigration. It's ICE itself. It's being invaded by these violent militias. And this is an extremely polarizing operation. And I just saw on Fox News saying that this is an insurrection of Minnesota. So at the same time that the Western powers, Western officials, are planning war with Russia, they're planning a civil war in the United States against Minnesota. I mean, it's beyond crazy.
Well, it seems that they're being very provocative, and the methods, whether it's ICE or any other agencies, there's also National Guardsmen from other states being sent across the country into these areas. And in red states, too, it should be noted, I just saw a report from Kansas where there's hundreds coming out into the streets to protest this as well. It's not just in the blue or Democratic, traditionally Democratic voting states in the United States that are against it. It's or even just against ICE, but these methods. Now, the people that they've recruited they seem to be the dregs of society, the thugs that are law enforcement that don't have proper training, don't care about training, all culminating perhaps last week in the murder of a soccer mom who was getting in the way of their roundups, shot in her car while she sat there talking to this guy. But they disallowed emergency help. A doctor on the scene says, "I'm a doctor. Let me go help her." And he was stopped, and the guard stopping her, the ICE guy, said, "I don't care." And this is something we've seen in Palestine for years. But, you know, I wonder about the training, the cross-pollination, but mostly the dehumanization of their fellow citizens.
I think people believe that they are simply protecting innocent victims of mistaken arrests from their troubles, and that they don't. It's not a way of wanting to violate the law. They think that the ICE people are violating the law.
Well, indeed they are, and you call them troops, and I think that might be the telling difference. And they are the idea that they bring up this whole thing about Somali immigrants, so that they can target black people, black Americans. I mean, these guys behave like the slave patrols of old, and it does seem to be leading in the same direction as the North-South United States in the 19th century. Diana, we're fast out of time. Thanks a lot for coming on. As usual, there's always something fascinating going on in France and Europe generally. We hardly hear about it over here. And when we do, we don't get the kind of background and context that you provide us. I thank you for that. And thanks for coming on the show again.
Okay, thank you.
Now I'm going to take a brief break. I'll be back with John Helmer. We're going to talk a little bit more about Russia and the Ukrainian war and other things of interest in that sphere. Escape the Narrative, Guerrilla Radio.
Mass troops occupying the city streets, disappearing people from under their feet, sending them to wherever they go. Here or El Salvador, nobody knows, boarding tankers off the Caribbean coast. Which country does he want to provoke the most? Who can know what might be the next phase in these apocalyptic days? In the moments before the Third World War, the Third World War. Missiles missiles and fighter jets, abducting a country's president, dropping bunker busters on Iran, where they say civilization once began. Confrontations with historic